This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to the Morning Run. Good morning. I'm Roshan Kanasin with Noel Lim in the studio this morning. Now, let's take a look at what's happening in the 7 to 8 hour before we dive into the current hour we're in, because we've got a pretty exciting lineup today. YB Ong Kian Ming will be coming on the show at about 7:15 to talk about his view on direct negotiations. We'll also be taking a look at the state of the movie business at 7:30 and a preview of the slim by-election at 7:45. A riveting 45 minutes for you at 7 to 8 a.m. And as usual, at 7 a.m., we take a look at world markets, which is particularly exciting because yesterday, Jerome Powell spoke at Jackson Hole, the Jackson Hole Summit. Always an exciting time if you're a markets nerd. Noel, of the four things I mentioned there, which are you most excited for?
Well, I will have to say it's the direct negotiations. We're going to have the good MP, Dr. Ong Kian Ming, on air. But just looking very quickly at what's coming up in 15 minutes or half an hour's time, the RNC, the Republicans National Convention, will bring you some updates, narratives from Trump, our favorite president. Also, we're looking at China, what they're up to on the military front.
Yes, and that's always an exciting, I'm using the word exciting too much. Maybe it's because it's Friday, Noel. That excitement that's exuding out from
me
is
because your voice.
There is a long weekend ahead of us and a Merdeka weekend nonetheless. So wishing everyone a Selamat Hari Merdeka in advance. But in 10 minutes, we're going to talk about whether Zoom is killing your flow state. And before that, what does the new norm for grocery shopping look like? We'd really want to hear what you have to say about this. If you've got any tweets or comments, let us know on Twitter at BFM Radio or over WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. Keep it here to BFM 89.9, the business station. Welcome back to the Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanasin with Noel Lim in the studio this morning. And indeed, we will get by, we will survive. That was the war on drugs with Touch of Grey. Nice little easy way to start off the morning. And, we will survive the pandemic. We have come through quite a bit in the last few months. And we're looking towards what is the new normal, what's the next normal. But one of the things that I used to love doing, Noel, was grocery shopping. I loved going to the grocery store. I liked walking around. I had my list, but I just liked looking at all the different things, right? But now that just seems, I still remember enjoying it, but it's such a worrying experience now. How has grocery shopping changed for you?
At the beginning, during the MCO, it was quite an anxious time for me because there were long queues, right? And then you had to do all this, wear face mask and all that. And people were around you were also equally quite anxious. But now the queues have gone down, so it's not as anxious moment kind of situation for me. But I have to say, it has changed in the sense that ironically, during the MCO, I shop once a week. And actually now I shop more frequently. In fact, more frequently than pre-MCO, which might seem strange because now I'm eating more at home.
Ah, right. Now, the more important question is, Noel, how many times on average did you sanitize your hands while you were in the grocery store?
I have to say I only do it before and after. See, so I don't do it during... Do you do it during the...
See, your method is the rational way of doing it. I do not apply the rational way of doing it. I think during my most paranoid, anxious states, I would sanitize every like 3 minutes or something like that.
So every fruit you touch, you sanitize.
Oh, I don't
every
touch
vegetable.
Any, don't touch anything. And I would touch, I think it would be a situation where if I had to pick up something after and I feel like I need to touch my face, I'll sanitize straight away. And then, like, you know, sometimes you just want to scratch your nose, right?
I know.
And in an age where you have to think about scratching your nose and you have a process to get to that, to scratching that itch, it is really quite a strange
situation.
So I use,
like, my wrist to do it? You don't use your fingers?
That is a very interesting method. I should think about that. Maybe you have a separate device to scratch your nose.
Yes, a face scratcher.
But we're diverging from the main topic here, which is talking about how grocery shopping could change, right? So we've seen a lot of purely online grocery shopping happening. I think if you look at some of the big players in the US, Walmart saw its grocery sector grow significantly. Its e-commerce, its online shopping doubled in that time. And you've also seen players like if you look like Beyond Meat, for example, no one was buying food from the hotels, the restaurants, the cafes. But Beyond Meat's online grocery and grocery shopping division I think doubled during that time. So it kind of offset the impact of people not dining into restaurants and restaurants not buying their product. And we're seeing things like this one concept that we're taking a look at the BBC today is basically a container on wheels that's a grocery store. It's very interesting. There's an interesting mock-up they've got here.
Yeah, so this is a Canadian startup and they are running a mobile supermarket in a semi-open air truck that shoppers can just step abroad, grab essentials while maintaining social distancing measures. I think they are allowing about 5 people up into that truck, which is interesting. I think on the upside is that it provides some convenience because it's like a pop-up store, right? If hopefully not too far from your house. But I think they're going to be positioned near the bus stops. And so people can just grab what they need and then just walk home. So it's a convenience in a different way. I can see that, you know, sometimes people are not at home. They are not there to accept their delivery. So perhaps this is another option for them instead of a supermarket and a delivery.
Yeah, I wonder if this works in smaller towns instead of the big towns, right? Like you've seen I've seen a lot of grocery stores expand. Like the example would be something like Jaya Grocer, right? I mean, from the time they started, I don't know how many years ago in Jaya 33, they seem to have sprouted everywhere. And when you see in an age where I think cold storage has just recently died, they're taking up those spots. I don't know how viable a grocery store on wheels would be in an age where I've got 3 apps on my phone that can get the groceries for me right now, unless you're someone who likes to pick your own stuff. I think that is still a very real consumer demand that people have.
Yeah, so it's like a 7-Eleven on wheels. And so it sits between delivery online and physical stores. But the thing is, shoppers do want certainty, right? If they need to get that thing, they need to know the store is available and the item is in that store. So I'm not sure if these mobile trucks would provide that kind of certainty because I think they move around. So that's one challenge they have. And secondly, I don't think people can escape long queues. If they become very popular, then there will be a queue, right? So in our weather, I mean, obviously it might not work so well because I'm not going to stand under the hot sun. Yeah, so that would be one thing. And yeah, I don't think you can escape that because they still need to apply social distancing rules.
Yeah, and again, we've got the options, right? I think we've got a local online only delivery store. I think it's called My Grocer. I'm not really sure what the name is, but this came up, I think, pre-pandemic, and I'm sure it's been boosted by the pandemic. Grab and I can't name a competitor at this point, but Grab also had its Grab Mart, and you've seen that surge as well.
And Tesco has it, but I'm not sure about now whether you have to actually book your slots. And apparently, the slots were quite far out, so, and by then you would have died of hunger.
Tesco delivery, it works in a situation where I think if you know on a weekly basis what you kind of average need, if you've got all the big data analytics of your household, you can kind of predict, use an algorithm to be like, every week I need this amount of this. Because you need to buy it in advance. I think you need to book your slot in advance because I think one of my friends was looking at this for his grandma who lives alone. And eventually what he ended up doing during the MCO and during the RMCO, during some state of the MCO, was he would have to go and buy the groceries for his grandma to go. And, I mean, it came down to that, right? But it is an interesting situation, right? Because I still enjoy the idea of going to the grocery store. Occasionally when I'm around, let's say, for example, Bangsar Village, I'm still nostalgic for just walking around. I know it's a really strange thing to be nostalgic around about just going into a grocery store and walking around, picking your stuff. But I found it a very nice, calming, mindful practice. But now I see the lines in front and the rules around it, and
constant sanitizing.
It no longer feels mindful. Right now, we're going into a few messages. When we come back, is Zoom killing your flow state? Keep it here to BFM 89.9 to find out. Welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanesan with Noel Lim in the studio this morning. And that was the Commodores with Brick House with a really, really funky vibe there. You know what's not been very funky vibe in recent times, Noel? Zoom. Sometimes I feel like Zoom is killing my vibe. What about you?
Are you feeling zoomed out? Well, I have to say I am sometimes feeling that, especially if after a long day. I think here really about, you know, we can get into a flow, right? A deep state of flow in things that we are doing, that especially things that we enjoy, right? Like, say, for example, preparing for an interview or playing the piano or something like that. But when you are put in front of a screen and you're trying to communicate, say, with your colleagues or, you know, maybe even clients, and it can be quite difficult because it can be distracting, right? Technology.
Oh, for sure. Because it's also a very different situation, right? It's disruptive, it's different, and something we're not conventionally used to. And the flow state depends on being able to do something that is tough, but not too tough, right? It's getting on, like, work you enjoy, or even work that you don't enjoy, but it's fulfilling in some nature that gives you just the right challenge, right? And you get into this state of where, you know, it's like Limitless, that movie where everything just goes into a blur and you're focused on your work and you feel super productive. And that is something that that is hard to come by in this very disruptive world right now. Because, you know, I read this post, I think it was yesterday, one of my friends put this up, that we take for granted the fact that now we are perpetually connected and perpetually contactable. But no one asked us whether we wanted this, right? And that's a really good point to make. Do you want to be perpetually contactable? I don't want to be. So that's why I think things like do not disturb modes and putting your phone on silent, turning it off at a certain point, these are all essential to keeping your sanity in check at some point here.
Yeah, so I think when, say, we're in front of the computer and, say, for Zoom, what distracts us is technology. For example, if for some reason somebody's face is frozen, or worse still, if it's your face that's frozen, and that can be quite awkward looking, you know, your data connection may not be that good. So all this can be very distracting, and you're also squinting your eyes, trying to look at people's body language and all that, right? And trying to make meaning out of what's going on through your screen. So all that can be very distracting and steals your flow away. So so what does it mean to stay in the flow, which is to be completely in the moment, taking a deep breath, maybe your heart rate slows down. So how do you bring those qualities when you're in front of the screen? And I think it's really to just relax and to just come to a point where you say, okay, you know what? I cannot conquer the world, and that's okay. I will just go with the flow. After all, it's another human being on the other side talking to me, with probably with the same level of anxieties.
Yeah, I think that's a good point to make, because when you come to a point where you are talking online, it's different, right? So, I mean, I think we've all had experiences in having physical meetings where we feel it's a waste of time. But I've also had, I don't know about you, but I've also had times where I've had flow state meetings, right? Meetings that just hit the spot. Everyone is in the zone. We are all contributing great ideas. And, you know, it's a meeting you come out feeling great about. I find that harder to do online, although not necessarily impossible, if your internet connection is great and your the communication, if you figured out a formula for it, right? So things like your friends putting their hands up, people keeping their mics on mute at certain points, because it's not necessarily it can be very disruptive when two people try to talk at the same time on Zoom, because of that slight lag, one person may both pull out at the same time and then join the conversation again at the same time. So that disruption is likely to take you out of the flow state.
Yes, and especially when there are several Zoom screens, right? So even for the facilitator, it can be a bit of a hassle, you know, moving across pages. So I think being in the flow is really what keeps up productivity as well as motivation, and also connection with the people that you are communicating with.
Yeah, it is Zoom fatigue. I think that's the term that people are calling it now. The perpetual amount of meetings it takes, the amount of time it takes to get used to this. I think we really do have to keep in mind and forgive ourselves for the fact that this is new. This is not, the human race for centuries has used physical communication, face-to-face communication to get messages across. In 6 months, we're all being forced to use digital. As it is before this, there were people struggling to use, to adapt over time. Now everyone's been shoved in it together. It is difficult to do, even for digital natives, to perpetually only have that that virtual connection.
Yes. Also, I've been thinking about this, right? We also have to become even more mindful about our language, because in a physical meeting, we can use body language and people can see our intentions from that. Whereas online, there's really only just your voice and maybe your facial features. So it's really important to kind of be even super more mindful about how we're communicating, how we are putting our, phrasing our words, and how we even sound.
Yeah, and I mean, this really brings back nostalgic feelings. I know, I've been talking a bit about nostalgia right now because I was nostalgic for...
Is it because it's
for,
Friday and it's Merdeka Day coming up?
Friday, it's Merdeka, you've got all these different feelings about you. But no, it's also just that this topic reminds me of just about how it was like to have everyone in the office, because BFM is operating at 50% in any given week, right? Half the office is at home when the other half is in the office, yeah. And so it feels like we haven't seen our colleagues on the other side for 6 months. That's how long it's been. It feels like Thanos snapped a Thanos. This feels like that Avengers situation where Thanos snapped his fingers, but instead of getting rid of half of living creatures, he split the world into two parallel universes.
Okay, that sounds very chim, but it's like families being divided for a while.
Yes, it does. And you know what? I really hope that we bring back the old way of doing things and maybe merge it with a hybrid version of what we're doing now. And to take right now, we're going into a few messages and then the 6:30 AM news bulletin. And to take you there, bring it back again by Stray Cats. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kunnison with Noel Lim in the studio this morning. And that was Lady Ray with Guilty off her 2016 album Queen Alone. And right now we're taking a look at the international headlines. And happening soon will be the last day of the Republican National Convention. Because right now it is about 6:40 p.m. in the U.S., Thursday, their side. And we're expected to see President Donald Trump have his first be confirmed as the nominee for the, I think that's all but certain, unless something really, really crazy happens. But this is going to be the ending note for him, right? And it's going to be an opportunity for the president to speak to the nation, right? Because this week has seen more protests come about. And I mean, for all intents and purposes, it really has been the Trump show this week. It's been very interesting to see how... It's not a Republican National Convention. It's the Trump National Convention. That's just a personal opinion of mine. And it's going to, his notes today will be very important in setting the tone for what I think will be the continuation of the Trump show. And let's see whether he tries to unite the nation or continues to cater to his audience, I guess.
This is going to be obviously a very interesting speech. It is his final night. And so I think it's a lot of speculation about what he's going to cover in the speech and how he will deliver it. So BBC has this piece here by Katie Kay, a World News America presenter. And so she says this, Donald Trump has a choice tonight, and she lays out the choices. He can revive the American carnage message of his inaugural speech, you know, painting a bleak picture of burning American cities and violence running rampant. Or he can express empathy and try to be more inclusive, and which might seem to be you know, quite a different tone that he's always been taking. So I think so he's presented with two quite different choices, and you know, for me, I think he might take sort of the middle ground, hard stance on some issues, and maybe a slightly softer tone, more inclusive. I don't think he can gamble with something too strong a message.
Yeah, this is going to be, it's going to be an important, this is going to be the tone set, right? And he can try and to position himself, continuing the strongman position, and be like, oh, we're going to be hard on crime. And he can paint the protests however he wants to paint them, right? But he has, I think for a lack of a better term, has softened his position on it, because just from one point of view, so when we had the, so yesterday, the NBA, some of the players, or actually both teams in one of those games, they completely boycotted the match. This was the game, it was a playoff game between the, okay, I can't remember who the parties are. I think Orlando Magic and the Milwaukee Bucks, they didn't play the game in protest of what was happening. And he, President Donald Trump's response to that was, oh, I don't know what's happening. The NBA is losing its ratings, blah, blah, blah. It was diminishing the NBA the NBA's influence. But 2 years ago, when Colin Kaepernick and the NFL, when Colin Kaepernick kneeled in protest, he flat out called out that he should be fired, right? So that was a very hard stance back then. But things, the narrative and the tone has changed post George Floyd. So I wonder what kind of note he has to address this, because he is trying to lure in the Black American voters as well, that he cannot ignore them. And there are Republican, even in the convention, we saw Black American Republicans come out to talk about how much President Trump has done for the African American community. So this is definitely a demographic he wants to get in his camp. How is he going to do it?
Yeah, so I think he will have to take a very stern stance on crime, violence, looting, for example. At the same time, pointing to his track record. For example, he signed the First Step Act that was signed by him, I think, in December 2018. And this, among some reforms that the act introduces, is to reduce the number of inmate population, maintaining public safety, and reforming some federal prison laws. At least it's a step in the right direction. How effective this law is, I do not know. But the fact that he signed that bill, and it's an indication that, you know, some things are happening in the US. And, you know, we can hear a lot of noise in the media, but there are also a couple of good things that he has done.
Yeah, and it's going to, this election is going to be, the run-up to the election is going to be interesting, because I've seen some comments from Nancy Pelosi saying that Joe Biden shouldn't dignify Trump with a debate. I think that plays out bad for Biden, because end of the day, the Republican campaign and Donald Trump will use it to make him look even weaker. I mean, let's be very clear about this. From the way I look at it, it is very easy to paint Joe Biden as weak from a Trump point of view, because he's not as aggressive and not as quote unquote macho fiery sort of situation. He's a statesman, and that's what they're trying to paint him as. So he should do the debates, and he should continue to be statesmanlike.
So the messages can be very confusing, right? Because actually, if you look at Joe Biden's track record in the 1980s and 1990s, Biden actually sponsored and supported laws that created mandatory minimum sentences for drug-related crimes, and he also increased funding for states for building actually more prisons. So, you know, people do blame him for, you know, getting more people into prison. But that was in the 80s and 90s, right? And times have changed, and as an individual, people change too. So, and he did justify to say his intention was not to target any person of any particular color of skin. It just happens to be the intention was to you know, manage crime.
And that was also the framing back then, right? That was the situation that they feel. And the fact that he recognizes that now is a good sign. And also, just to correct myself, Colin Kaepernick took the kneeled back in 2016. So that was the last election. So that change in tone is particularly interesting to see. Right now, we're going into a few messages, and then when we come back, a look at the local papers and portals. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. Welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Khanasan with Noel Lim in the studio this morning. And that song was Mr. Jones by The Counting Crows, adding to the nostalgia that we are delving into this morning. Right now, we're taking a look at the local papers and the portals. So I've got the Star in front of me, and they were going with the headline that foreign students are eager to study here. And this is based on the fact that even though we've got borders shut, there has been a increase in new applications over the last few months. I mean, particularly low in April and May. I mean, to be fair, those were some of the worst months. But in July, apparently, it looks like applications were up to about 2,800 from June. That was 1,500. So definitely, Malaysia is one of those spots, I think, for certain countries where education, they come here to study.
Yeah. So I'm listening to some of these advertisements and reading the advertisements of colleges or local universities, local private universities, right? So they're really positioning their message as come to us, spend the first year or second year with us, and then third year you can go to the UK or US to finish your education. After all, now the COVID-19 situation in UK and US is so fluid, right? Is there, you know, quarantine checks, and it's quite complicated there. So obviously Malaysia is that probably the safer point, the safer place to be here now.
And, you know, Noel, as you talk about that, I turn the newspaper and look at it. It's a university advertisement talking about all the different places you can go. You can go and study in Berkeley. You can study in Harvard, MIT, Alibaba Business School in China. So, yes, this is definitely something that that people want to emphasize, right? But here's the thing. When we talk about education in the new normal or the next normal, I think, you know how we talk a lot about how supply chains will be fragmented and regional? I think that's going to happen with education as well. I mean, maybe the top schools in the world will still have their allure, but maybe we'll see Australia become more prominent. Maybe we'll see Malaysia. We've got Monash University, Sunway, and a lot of other international colleges here, and Nottingham as well. Maybe we'll see Malaysia become more of a regional hub, Singapore. Maybe within the region, people will stick within that region.
Yes, we may be the cheaper option than Singapore. And furthermore, there's all this tension going on between China and Australia. And we are very friendly to the Chinese, right? So maybe instead of going to Australia first, they'll come to us as the first point of contact. And what I have in the Star is... in the NST, Admin EMCO, which is the... Administrative or Temporary Enhanced Movement Control Order will start today, and this will be in three zones in Aman Jaya, Sungai Petani in Kedah. And what will happen is that this is until further notice. So all 22,000 people from 265 households in these three zones will be screened for COVID-19, and they will have to obviously go through all the SOP procedures. And unfortunately, the residents in these affected areas will not be allowed to leave the area.
And just taking a look at some corporate news, actually, some really big news. Transmile Group's Berhad's founder and former CEO, Gan Boon Aun, has been found guilty by the Sessions Court for furnishing misleading financial statements to Bursa Malaysia in 2007. The judge sentenced the 59-year-old to R2.5 million fine and one day in jail. However, in the event that he's not able to pay the fine by today, by today, he faces 18 months imprisonment. So I think this is something that's been going on for, 10 years in 10 years of trial. And this is for a case back in an issue back in 2007.
This case. I'm like, oh, it's still going on.
Noel, regale me with the stories, because I was 17 years old at that point. I was not interested in this much business.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's such an old story, something about accounting fraud. Yeah, so that's in short, I can say. But, you know, back to political news, a few things going on here. Datuk Sri Ismail Sabri, we have to also remember he has a political life, not just as a defense minister. He's the VP of UMNO, and he's come out to say if the Sabah elections, if Barisan Nasional does well, he's saying that, you know, the country should have a snap elections soon, because he feels that this will be a good chance for BN to come back into power, or BN or Muafakat, depending on which coalition you support.
And something else that came out yesterday as well was that the ERC, the Electoral Reform Committee, handed its report over to the Prime Minister, and in there there were a few proposals, including having three separate bodies for elections, which includes an election commission, which will remain the body tasked with the running of election, an election secretariat, which would conduct the election process, and an electoral redelineation commission, which will be responsible for redelineating electoral boundaries. So breaking up these three things, and essentially also adding there were other proposals, which include giving the EC ability to audit election expenses and giving them some teeth, essentially enforcement capability. Now, there's a lot in this report to cover, so I do highly recommend you go and check out the report itself. And we did speak to the ERC chairman a few months back, last year, I think. So check that out on The Breakfast Grill. Just search for ERC. You should be able to find it. Right now, we're going into a few messages. And when we come back, this 7 a.m. news bulletin, followed by our talk, we'll be taking a look at world markets and some insights into Jackson Hole. Keep it here to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.